Okay, we'll go ahead and call our next case here, if the attorneys can come up. That's case number 54996, Allison Stickney v. Valley Health System, LLC. Okay. Mr. Brenske's here for the appellant, here, and Mr. Stryker for the respondent. Okay, Mr. Brenske, whenever you're ready to proceed, you may do so.
Yes, Your Honor. I wanted to hand a couple of documents to the clerk so the court can
have. Has the opposing counsel seen those?
He's seen them more times than he could ever probably wish to want to know.
I assume they're part of the record in this case. Mr. Stryker, do you have any problem with us looking at them or whatever?
Probably, Your Honor, I have no problem.
Okay, very well. You may do so then.
Counsel, Your Honors. This is William R. Brenske and Jennifer Andrewski for the plaintiff, Allison Stickney. This is an appeal with regards to a jury verdict that went for the defendant, Valley Hospital, in this case. Mm-hmm. Very, very briefly, what occurred in this case is that my client, Allison Stickney, had chest pains, went to Fremont Medical Center. Fremont Medical Center thought she might be having a pulmonary embolism, so they called the Clark County Fire Department emergency team. They came in, put an IV in her, and she went to Valley Hospital. She gets to Valley Hospital around 12:30 in the afternoon on the 27th of May of 2004. And over about an 8-hour period, she's waiting to get a CAT scan done. And so she gets taken from the ER to the CT to get a CT with dye. When the CT technician injects that dye, the IV catheter is not in her vein, and it goes directly into her left forearm.
Well, but wait a minute. That was contested at trial, right?
Whether it was not, Your Honor.
Okay.
There is no testimony from any witness, expert, or otherwise in evidence that says the IV catheter was in the vein. If you look at the testimony, and I've looked at it, and unfortunately the quotations that are listed in the respondent's brief omit certain critical passages that are relevant to this case. There were a total of four witnesses who have expertise in medicine. One was Kelly Twells, the nurse who was the expert.
Who was
nurse
your expert, correct?
Plaintiff's expert. Mm-hmm. There was Nurse Hogan, who was defense expert, mm-hmm. and there was Nurse LaPointe, who was the Valley Hospital nurse in charge of my client at the time this incident occurred. All three experts testified concerning the standard of care under nursing. All three experts testified under oath that failure to check the patency of an IV prior to injecting anything into a patient is below the minimum acceptable standard of care in any case. In this particular case, the evidence that we have is that when Mr. LaPointe, who is Valley Hospital's employee and employee of the defendant, checked the patency of the IV immediately after the infusion of 80 cc's of dye into her left forearm, the IV was not patent. In other words, the catheter was not in the vein. These are facts that are uncontroverted. What happened in this case, very briefly, is defense counsel, to his credit, asked hypothetical questions: can this happen, can that happen? No expert testimony whatsoever. What was there that in this case the IV somehow was patent when it went in and blew up? There's no evidence anywhere contained in the record whatsoever. The very evidence that counsel is relying upon with regards to Nurse Hogan's testimony, if you look at it, and he quotes it, what he fails to state is the question, and this is in it's in volume 3, exhibit 1, line 213 through page 13 and through page 214. He goes through all these questions of his own witness Hogan, and then he says, in this case, do you believe that could have been the reason why this vessel blew? Answer, Mr. Brenske calls for speculation, part of the witness, Your Honor, court sustained. No, there's no evidence from any witness anywhere that follows the theory that the defendant has in this case, that somehow the IV was nicked or the vein was hurt somehow and it blew up. There's not a single person testified to that effect. The only person that, quote, testified, or unquote, testified to that was Mr. Stryker in his opening statement. He told this jury in opening statement, here's how this happened. The paramedics must have injured the vein, and it was really damaged, and then at the time the stuff was put in, it must have blown the vein. There is not a single piece of evidence anywhere that follows that. In fact, in our trial brief, which is part of the record, we filed, we said a nurse cannot give expert testimony concerning causation. And that's why my objection was sustained at the time the question was asked by Mr. Stryker of his expert witness.
Now, Mr. Brenson, can we jump around a little bit? Because I know we got a lot of interesting issues in this case, and maybe we could focus in on it. Now, as far as the disclosure of Dr. Wabara, who's the treating physician, and he was going to be a witness in the case, in the 16.1 or supplements or whatever, what was disclosed about the nature of his testimony?
Your Honor, there are we listed Dr. Wabara as the treating physician. But what the court must remember is Dr. Wabara was the physician who treated Allison Stickney on an emergent basis at the time this incident occurred.
Right.
I mean,
we understand that. So
he is the physician that can testify to causation. Obviously, the case law that we provide indicates that if you identify the treating physician as a witness and you give the records of the physician to defense counsel, that and it gives them notice that he's going to testify about causation, that would be sufficient.
Well, but did his treatment encompass a determination as to how the dye came in her arm? Because that's a different issue. It's one thing to put a treating physician up as essentially a fact witness, and it was relevant to his factual assessment and treatment, but it's another thing if he's developing an opinion for the purposes of trial. There's a distinction there, and I'm not clear from this record what exactly his treatment entailed.
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, Dr. Wabara was listed as a medical doctor who's going to testify in this case, and we provided the records of both the Sunrise Hospital records that he was a treating physician, did three surgeries on this lady, that both his operative report, his diagnosis, and all his office care treatment was given to the defense counsel in this case very early. So all of his treatment, he treated this woman for about 2 months, from the night that this occurred till she was released from care by Dr. Wabara. In both the hospital records and in the doctor's records, there are 13 separate places where it shows diagnosis. All of them say compartment syndrome. All of them say left forearm and arm. The actual testimony from the time of trial, which was contained in the respondent's brief, but then failed to indicate the following sentence, indicated that Dr. Wabara would have testified that the only way this could have happened is for the dye to be injected directly into the arm, not into a vein.
Where is that testimony?
Yes, Your Honor, if I could. If I could approach the clerk, I'd have it with me.
Would you please show it to Mr. Stryker? We'll give you both a little extra time with these. Get this sorted out here.
The document that I'm showing the court is a multiple document. All it does, on the left-hand side are the quotations by the respondent and the respondent's brief as to what the testimony was. On the right side is the quotations in the record. Each and every one of these quotations fails to indicate the important part of the quotation. So if you look at the last one, where the quotations in the respondent's brief are, his answer is, when somebody or anybody injects a material into a vein, it's supposed to go into the vein carried by the blood. If, however, the injection is not inside the vein or with the caps and underlying, it leaks out direct tissues, and it doesn't, then it then flows into the wrong place and cause problem. Well, the very next sentence that Dr. Wabara said in that trial as part of this answer was, if the material is injected into the vein, there should be no problem. Respondent somehow failed to put that part of the answer of Dr. Wabara, which is part of this record.
Was that testimony stricken or not put before the jury?
It was put before the jury. It was not stricken. It's the only testimony by a treating physician or anyone qualified to testify as to causation in the entire transcript.
And what beyond that would he have testified to had opposing counsel? Excuse me.
I apologize, John.
What does this record show his testimony, had it been allowed as you wanted to present it, would have been?
The offer of proof was that this compartment syndrome could not have happened the way that Nurse Hogan was going to testify that it was going to happen.
Where's that offer of proof?
Your Honor, it's contained not only in the trial brief, which is in Volume 1 of the record. That's where you're going to find it in the record. We made an offer of proof, but...
You did make the offer of proof on that.
We did, Your Honor, and I will tell you that the court recorder in this particular case was abysmal. But it's in the...
Is it in there in the record that you transmitted?
Okay. What I have in this record that I can show to this court what the offer of proof would have been was in the plaintiff's trial brief filed with the trial court at the beginning of the trial.
What would it have added to the complete question and answer in the exhibit you handed up, questions in the record? You just directed our attention to the omitted sentence.
Yes.
What beyond that would your offer of proof have shown?
The offer of proof would have been that under this situation, there is no way possible that this event could have occurred the way that Nurse Hogan said it occurred, that somehow there was an injury to the vein and it would blow out. Because if there was an injury to the vein and it did blow out, the vast majority of this would go straightly through the vein because of the pressure that this has brought in. I mean, it was very simple stuff. That would have been the offer.
Now, Judge Bell uses a recorder, not a reporter.
She uses a recorder, not a reporter.
Okay.
We have what we have, Your Honors. Okay. But there, I would challenge respondent's counsel to come up here and show this court where anyone testified to a reasonable degree of medical certainty that the theory that was given in the opening statement somehow occurred in this case, that the paramedic somehow injured this vein and then it blew up at the time of the CT technician's. It's not in there, Your Honor.
Okay. And Mr. Brensky, on one other issue on the Coden, on the close source issue, reading your brief, you feel because it's a rule that it's a substantive issue, so it can't be retroactive.
It has to be a substantive issue. That there's no other way around it, because if you get a whole lot less money if you retroactively apply the statute, then it has to be substantive. If it's simply procedural, then there's no great wrong. But in this particular case, and you know, the Proctor versus Castelletti case sets it all out that it's a substantive right. So,
okay.
I, you know, whether or not, you know, that in and of itself is obviously not grounds for an appeal. But we wanted to bring this to the court's attention because we feel confident that we'll prevail on this and we want to get an order from the court. I'd like to save or reserve some time for rebuttal.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Stryker.
May it please the court, Your Honor, counsel. I'm at a loss to really understand why this has just been admitted as evidence to this oral argument. It's not been discussed in counsel's oral argument before this court. I can only assume it's for shock value, and I don't think that that's appropriate. Having said that, I'd like to move on to my argument, if I may. There's a lot that I want to say.
Were these pictures in the record, though?
They were, but I don't hear how they're at.
Well, I think I know both of us, and I know Justice Cherry, we understand what happened as far as the incision to remove the dye. We didn't know exactly what it looked like, but we understand the severity of what happened here.
Thank you very much. I've made notes during counsel's oral argument. I'd like to hit those notes that I made, because they focus in on the questions that were addressed to counsel by this panel, I'd like to have an opportunity to address some of those questions that were posed and just provide my insights if I could. It was posed by plaintiff's counsel that when the CT tech injected the dye, it was not in the vein. Justice Pickering asked, well, where is that in the testimony? Where is that established in the trial record? It was never established in the trial record. The only thing that was established in the trial record is that after this event happened, the nurse in the emergency room pulled back or aspirated fluid from the catheter, which had just been subjected to a high-pressure injection of CT dye with an automatic power injector in the radiology department, and he found that there was no blood return, indicating to him it was probably not within the vein. There is no testimony on record that at the time the dye was pushed through this IV line, that it was not in the vein. None. Now, there could have been that testimony had we been able to call the CT tech, Dale Eggleston, who was there at the bedside, who checked the IV. He would have testified he checked the IV and how he testified.
He was excluded because not timely disclosed, though, correct?
Precisely, Your Honor. He was disclosed 2.5 months before trial. Our office, unfortunately, had a breakup. Half of our attorneys left. All of our paralegals left. He was inadvertently not disclosed. We apologized profusely. We offered to pay for the deposition, move the trial, and do whatever we could to alleviate any prejudice. But he was restricted by the discovery commissioner to testifying only as to matters that he wrote down in the chart. The problem, Your Honors, is that he's a CT tech. The testimony on the record by our expert witness, Nurse Hogan, is that CT techs don't chart. They don't document. They take the patient, they bring him to the CT, they bring him to the CT lab, they check the IV, they shoot the dye, they take the pictures, they walk the films to the radiologist who interprets them, and then they walk the patient back. There's testimony on record in this jury trial from our expert nurse. CT techs do not make any notations. They don't chart. They don't document. So it is no surprise that there was no evidence that the CT tech checked the patency of the IV before he injected the dye. Plaintiff's argument to the jury over and over and over again was, do you see any evidence in the medical record that the CT tech inspected the IV and found it to be patent before he injected the dye? And if you don't do so, it's negligence. We established through our nursing expert, CT techs don't write anything down. So it should be no surprise that there was not a shred of notation or evidence in the record that the IV site was checked. Once again, that evidence would have been presented from the CT tech had he been allowed to testify.
Could you comment on what the state of the record is with respect to the proffer of Dr. Wabera's testimony and why, if it was error to disallow it, it is or is not something that affected the substantial rights under Rule 61 and the evidence code?
That I'd be happy to, Your Honor, because I think that is obviously a very large part of the appeal. Plaintiff's counsel a moment ago explained to Your Honors that Dr. Wabera was disclosed as a treating physician. His medical records were produced. Okay. Unfortunately, 16.1 requires a little more. It requires a general description of the witness's anticipated testimony. I got an address, a street address, maybe a phone number. I didn't even get the standard sentence that's always provided by every attorney. It is anticipated that this witness will testify the facts and circumstances underlying this action. I didn't even get that. So I was certainly not placed on notice that this treating physician who saw the patient across town at another hospital, Sunrise Hospital, the following day. Now, granted, it was a matter of hours. I want to say that the patient came back from CT approximately 8 a.m., and Wabera testified that he provided his treatment in the early morning hours the following day across town at Sunrise Hospital. How was I to know? Plaintiffs would attempt to elicit expert testimony as to standard of care or causation from this expert. Now, they didn't seek standard of care testimony from Wabera. They sought causation. So let's talk about Johnson versus Ektidar, the hallmark opinion from this investigation.
Well, just for disclosure, I was not the judge on the first Johnson Ektidar. I was the judge on the retrial, so I'm quite familiar with it, but go ahead.
Johnson versus Ektidar, as I understand the written opinion, indicates that the hallmark of determining whether or not a treating physician can provide expert testimony on standard of care or causation is notice. Now, that notice can come to opposing counsel through one of two ways. It can be disclosed by their opposing counsel in a 16.1, an expert witness designation, a pretrial disclosure, something, affidavit of merit supporting the complaint under NRS 41A071, some written notice. I didn't get any, and that is, I think, undisputed. All I got was a street address, and he's a treating physician, and here's his records. The second way, under Johnson versus Ektidar, that an opposing counsel could obtain notice that he's got these opinions is if there's information in the doctor's medical records that would clue someone in to the fact that he holds opinions as to causation. What was in Dr. Wabara's medical records? The same thing that was in everybody, every other treating physician's medical records. Appellant's counsel mentioned in his oral argument that he was the key treating physician who treated this patient after this event. Well, no, not really. The patient was treated in the emergency room of Valley Hospital by the emergency room physician. He was then treated by the emergency room nurse. He was treated by a paramedic who brought the patient across town. He was received by the emergency medicine physician at Sunrise Hospital. I believe she was admitted and seen by an attending physician. I'd have to double-check the records. So Dr. Wabara is quite far down the chain. Once again, hours later across town is when he saw the patient. What's in Dr. Wabara's notes is that Ms. Stickney suffered from compartment syndrome as a result of fluid infiltrating / extravasating her forearm during Valley Hospital's injection of contrast dye into Ms. Stickney's forearm. Okay.
Why isn't that sufficient notice as to the cause of the compartment syndrome?
Because Dr. Wabara never put in his medical records there or anywhere else that the catheter was not in the vein. That is not in his medical records anywhere. It says that...
Is there anything that would show that it was necessary for his treatment of that patient to make that determination?
No, and let me give you an analogy. Sometimes physicians will treat a patient at a hospital. Drug overdose, narcotics. Okay, they get the patient. Patient can't speak. They know that the patient, by history of a friend or something, says, well, the patient took cocaine or heroin. Let's go with heroin. The physician might not know whether it was snorted, smoked, or shot through a needle, but they know that heroin's in the system. That's the diagnosis they have to treat. That's the condition they have to alleviate. In this case, Dr. Wabara knew that this patient had, according to his charting, suffered compartment syndrome as a result of fluid infiltrating extravasating her forearm during injection of contrast dye. Well, extravasation. In my answering brief to this court, I believe it's at page 17, I provide this court with two separate medical definitions of the term extravasation, one out of Webster's, one out of Tabor's Cyclopedic Medical Dictionary. The court can take judicial notice of either. The definition of extravasation is fluid moving from a vessel. Standard definition, to force or cause from a proper vessel or channel into surrounding tissue, or under Tabor's, to escape from vessel into tissue. Well, that means it was from vessel, meaning the vein, into tissue. That's a big difference to what he wanted to testify at trial, that it was never in the vessel, it never moved from point A to point B, as I dictated in my chart, as I wrote my chart repeatedly, as all the other physicians wrote in their chart, extravasation.
But why shouldn't that have been admitted and let you cross-examine on that point?
Very simple reason, Your Honor. It's unfair. It's just unfair. This is trial by ambush. I was sandbagged. And I don't say that lightly.
You didn't take Wabara's deposition. I mean, you could have asked him, what opinions do you have? Do you have any other opinions? And if he didn't have it at the time, you could have... the judge would have been correct not to let him testify.
I relied on the rules of procedure to have notice of who would testify as to what. Supporting the complaint, expert witness Kelly Twells. Plaintiff's counsel said in his oral argument before this court that there was three or four witnesses four expert witnesses with expertise in medicine. Twells, Hogan, LaPointe, well, they're all nurses. Now he's saying if they have expertise in medicine, they have expertise in nursing. But that was the affidavit that was provided supporting the complaint. As the court knows, every complaint of medical malpractice must be supported by an affidavit of merit supporting the claims therein. Standard of care, deviation, and causation. You got to have an affidavit of merit supporting both. Well, if appellant's counsel's argument to the jury is Nurse Twells and Nurse Hogan are nurses, and therefore they are not physicians, and therefore they cannot testify as to medical causation, I respectfully submit to Your Honors that means that we're here for no reason, because under Washoe Medical Center, the complaint was not properly supported under 41A071. It was supported by a nurse who cannot offer any testimony as to causation. Therefore, there was no prima facie support of plaintiff's complaint for medical malpractice in this case. It's void ab initio. It never legally existed, and there's no point for us being here today. But I would instead submit that what we ought to do is rely on the expert disclosure of plaintiffs. The affidavit of Nurse Twells specifically stated that this infiltration caused her injury. She was disclosed by affidavit, sworn testimony, as well as the expert witness designation as an expert who was going to testify as to causation. That's what I was led to believe. I didn't feel the need to depose Dr. Wabara, just like I didn't feel the need to depose Dr. Seif, because they were not in the room.
Did you ask an expert interrogatory in addition to relying on the rules?
Yes, Your Honor, I did. And they had a duty to supplement. That expert interrogatory requested disclose all experts, disclose their qualification, all opinions they hold, and the grounds for such opinions. That interrogatory was submitted before the expert disclosures. The objection from plaintiff's counsel is, objection, premature. Our expert disclosures are set for June 8, 2009. Basically, we'll see you then.
Where in the record is that?
Bear with me a minute. I apologize, it's back in my box, but it is in the record on appeal. It would be answers to interrogatories, and I believe they were answered in approximately February of 2009.
Could you comment on, let's assume for the sake of argument, and I'm not saying this because it's been decided by any means, but let's say that that the objection was wrongly sustained and Dr. Wabara should have been permitted to give more testimony. What does the record show he would have testified to, and why does it matter on this record or not matter?
The question was posed to Mr. Brensky, and he basically indicated that the trial brief had his offer of proof. I'm at a loss to understand why an offer of proof was not made at trial. I don't understand why a request to dismiss the jury and submit an offer of proof to the judge.
I thought he said it was made and it wasn't reported or recorded or something.
There wasn't any, Your Honor.
So you don't think
we've got videotape, or I should say MPEG, and the wonderful technology we have. I was just watching the trial last night. No such request for a recess of the jury and an offer of proof or additional laying of foundation was made by plaintiff's counsel at trial. It was only in the brief. Now, of course, I have the brief going into jury trial. I don't know what the offer of proof of Wabara was going to be, but I did know this. I knew that under 50.275, the Nevada revised statute that deals with expert testimony, and as interpreted by this court in the Hallmark versus Eldridge case, we know that there's three requirements for expert testimony. They have to be qualified, it has to assist the jury, and it must be limited in scope. That's the third requirement, as described by this court in Hallmark. It must be limited in scope. Now, that means limited to scope to the witness's knowledge. Now, ELGAS, which is the federal decision, I certainly understand it's not controlling precedent, but it is persuasive on this court. ELGAS was very clear at page 299 of that opinion. It basically described that a treating physician could provide expert testimony if they were an actor or viewer, but it doesn't just stop there. It doesn't say an actor or viewer of anything. They have to be an actor or viewer of the transactions or occurrences that are the subject matter of the suit. The transactions and occurrences that are the subject matter of this suit for medical malpractice didn't happen at Sunrise Hospital the following day across town. The subject matter and transactions and occurrences of the subject matter happened at Valley Hospital. They happened in the CT department. The only people there were and the witness that was stricken. And if for any reason this court was inclined to reverse this case and send it back, I would respectfully submit that the rules must play both ways. There must be fairness extended to both sides, and that we must turn back the hands of time to the point when Dr. Wabara was not properly disclosed, allow me to take his deposition, learn his opinions, retain an expert physician if necessary, and disclose the witnesses that the jury needs to hear from. Dale Eggleston, the CT tech, and Stan LaPointe, they should not be restricted in their testimony at all. I did request that relief in a footnote in my brief, although it did not cross appeal. Having said that, going back to ELGAS, an actor or viewer, what did Dr. Wabara testify to? Once again, we've established there's no offer of proof requested. I've got 25 seconds. I'm going to hurry. There was no offer.
Take your time. I'll give you a little extra time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I do appreciate it.
FedEx man is coming in.
I'm going fast. There was no offer of proof requested by plaintiff's counsel. The only foundation laid by plaintiff's counsel in front of the trial court judge was that Dr. Wabara testified, and it may even be in the exemplar that he gave. I have it written down. He says, based on all the history, this is what happened. And he tried to give his opinion. Well, what history did he get? He testified that he had interviewed the plaintiff. He spoke with her. Okay. The previous day, she testified before the same trial court judge that when the dye was being injected into her vein and just beforehand, she wasn't really paying attention. And the CT tech may have flushed the IV. So what history did Dr. Barr take? He took a history from a patient who knew nothing. So he knew nothing. And that is why the trial court properly limited his scope. The third requirement of Hallmark versus Eldridge, his scope of knowledge was limited to the interview of the plaintiff that he took and his intraoperative observations during the surgery. I had no objection to him testifying as a percipient treating physician as to whatever he did when he sliced the patient open, peeled back the muscle, the soft tissues, the vasculature, everything. But that's not where they were going. They wanted him to testify about what happened across town the day before when he was not in the room. It was properly excluded under Hallmark versus Eldridge. He had limited knowledge. He took an interview from somebody who didn't see anything and wasn't paying attention.
Did you look at the Hallmark's been clarified by Higgs? Have you looked at that in the modified Hallmark standard, just out of curiosity?
I didn't for purposes of today.
Okay, well, it's a criminal case. A lot of civil attorneys don't look
at it. I do recall
it
coming down, but because it was a criminal case, I didn't pull it for this purposes of today.
It might be a good idea for everybody. I don't know if it matters today, but it's probably a good idea. Once in a while, we read these criminal cases.
But I would point out, though, Elgin, the federal court, it also says that, and if I may go just a little bit longer, I apologize. Elgas basically says that, and that's at the following page. I quoted the page previously about the actor or viewer. Elgas says on the following page that the doctor who was allowed to testify, Dr. Jackson, who was never in the room with the patient, he has to be limited to his knowledge. He can testify as an expert, but he has to be limited to his knowledge. Once again, in this case, Dr. Barra didn't have that knowledge. I only want to point out one thing with regards to these quotations. What is important to the plaintiff is not as important to the defense. I cited the portions of the testimony that support my case. The portions that were not as important to me, I did not point out. It's the plaintiff's counsel's job to do so, but the testimony is there. The testimony supports the verdict that was reached by the jury.
Mr. Strike, let me ask you one other thing. Mr. Bransky, I'll give you some additional time with these questions. The issue of Coden and the retroactivity of NRS, I got the statute, I don't have the statute right in front of me, sure. But the Coden on the collateral source, what is your argument? I noticed your brief, you kind of did a flyover on the substantive versus procedural. Are your argument it's procedural?
My argument is that it's procedural, Your Honor. I don't have the...
Why? It's a rule of evidence.
Before Coden was enacted, the way we tried cases is that we received a verdict, and then in a separate proceeding under the then statute, the defense would have a right to an offset. So the offset happens after the verdict is returned, or instead before the verdict is returned, that's a rule of procedure.
Okay.
And the substantive rights are not materially affected either way because it's the same amount of money at the end of the day.
I just want to understand your argument. Thank you,
Your Honor. Appreciate it.
Mr. Brensky, you'll see you have 2 minutes, so we'll add a couple minutes to that, so we'll give you four minutes.
I don't believe I need any more than that time, Your Honor. The most telling portion of the respondent's argument today is I challenge the respondent to show anywhere in the record that their, quote, theory of how this occurred is backed up by any expert testimony by anyone. There is none, absolutely zero. The only expert testimony concerning causation is what was allowed by the court with regards to the three nurse experts, all of them saying it's below the minimum acceptable standard of care to fail to do a blood draw prior to injecting the dye, and Dr. Rabari indicating that if the material is injected into the vein, there should be no problem, i.e. this would not have occurred. That's the testimony that's before the jury. The reason that the jury did not find in favor of the plaintiff, even though the evidence was, although circumstantial, overwhelming as to how this occurred, was because they listened to the opening statement of defense counsel on this theory of they must have hurt the vein, the paramedics were at fault here, they damaged the vein, and then the CT was...
But the jury was told the opening statement's not evidence.
I agree.
I assume they were told that.
They were told that, Your Honor. That's why motions for judgment notwithstanding the verdict are part of the procedure that we have.
Was the verdict 8-0?
Don't remember, Your Honor.
Okay. We'll check and see that. Let me ask you, Mr. Brensky, briefly, on the supplements to the discovery, the 16.1 and the expert interrogatories, why didn't you supplement to give more details about what Dr. Wabara was going to testify
to? Your Honor, I don't have that in front of me, and I can't, I don't have that documentation before me as to what our interrogatory responses were. I do have before me the 13 notations in the records that were provided to the defense counsel concerning what Dr. Wabara said in his records concerning causation. Those are listed here. I made an extra list of them if the court would like to see them. Got copies for counsel.
Well, we'll certainly go back and look at the record on all the discovery issues since both.
Send this to the clerk, then, Your Honor, and if you want to look at it, fine. If you
Mr. Stryker.
I have to object, Your Honor.
Okay, Mr. Brensky, hang on.
I ordinarily don't. I really am very free with the admissibility of evidence as demonstrated at jury trial. I pretty much let everything in. But this isn't an accurate depiction of Dr. Wabara.
Okay, here's what we'll do. We'll sustain the objection. We'll look at the record. Well, I can assure you, both of you have made...
They're all part of the record. There's 13 separate instances indicating what the Dr. Wabara indicated was the causation for this event. And under the case law that counsel... I think it's my turn to talk, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Under the case law the counsel provided, it indicates that the court looks at the records that were provided by the party to the opposing party from the treating physician, and does that give that party notice as to what the physician is going to testify to? And we say the evidence is overwhelming from the records as to what Dr. Wabara was going to testify to, that this was a compartment syndrome based upon injection into the forearm, not into the vein.
Okay.
Very simple.
One other question on the offer proof issue. I guess there was a dispute if that was forth in court. Do you have a recollection of maybe the recorder turned off the machine or what happened?
I'll look at that stuff, particularly myself. I knew we looked for it while preparing for this hearing because I anticipated the court might ask that question. And the first place I found it was in the trial brief to the court as to what the offer proof would be.
Okay.
So I know we have that.
So you don't dispute what Mr. Stryker said, that it wasn't presented to the court. Trying to figure out what happened here.
Your Honor, here's my concern. If you look at the quotations from the respondent's brief that I gave you, every single one of them has critical portions of the testimony deliberately omitted. Every single one. Uh-huh. So I can't, I know what my recollections are.
Do you address those in the reply, though, in fairness?
In fairness, Your Honor, the reply was more broad-brushed than taking every quote and showing where the missing parts are. That's why I provided that to the court today.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Brensky. Mr. Stryker, you got 1 minute because some things came up. Go ahead and clarify for us.
The challenge. I fell into the rookie trap of not responding to the challenge, and I apologize. The challenge, I challenge Mr. Stryker to provide this quote with any evidence anywhere that a traumatic start can cause this type of injury. Well, it was produced in the exhibit under quotations in the record. I don't know what page this is. I believe it's page 2, Nurse Ball's testimony. Beginning at, let me show you page, bottom page 1, top page 2. Did your research indicate to you traumatic insertions can cause damage to the internal lining of the vessel, thus predisposing the vessel to further damage when an irritating fluid or medication is infused? Answer, yes. Now, that was your research, correct? Answer, yes. That wasn't defendant's research? Answer, right. Now, he highlighted the rest, and I omitted it. And I omitted a lot. Why? Because I got a page limitation. I'd love to put in every answer, but I can't because I have a page limitation on my briefing. Now, that right there is evidence of an alternative cause. It's not the defendant's burden of proof to prove an alternative cause to a reasonable degree of medical probability. All we have to do is provide sufficient evidence negating their cause.
Right, I understand. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
May I submit an exhibit? The court was interested in whether or not an offer of proof was made. I have the videotape in my bag. May I offer that? And you can certainly review it and find out whether or not he requested that jury be excused.
Why don't we do this? Show it to Mr. Brensky first. If you stipulate that it's I have no reason to think it's not authentic, but if you stipulate to that, then we'll receive it. We can only do it by stipulation at this stage.
I thank you very much for your time.
If I can briefly respond in 10 seconds to the last. Yes, if you look at the record, it says the bench conference was not transcribed concerning that very event. It's contained in Dr. Wabara's testimony in the record itself.
Okay.
So it's there. They didn't transcribe it, but it's there, and it's noted by the recorder in the record. at the time that Dr. Barr was supposed to testify, that's when we made our offer.
Takes me back to my district court days during this argument. Justice Pickering missed that, but it's kind of.
It's not my recollection. I'd like to see the videos, if I may. But I'll get with him and find out.
You too, if you can do a stipulation, then we'll proceed. Thank you. Okay, the case will.